The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Christy Walters for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is the Triangle Business Journal. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored, so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. Today's front page article of the Triangle Business Journal is a reimagined skyline. New towers rise in downtown Raleigh, but they aren't for offices. This article is written by Kaylee Thompson. Downtown Raleigh's big pivot. Residential towers, not offices, are reshaping the central skyline. 30 years ago, downtown Raleigh was a ghost town with only three towers dotting the skyline: the Round Holiday Inn, the Wells Fargo Tower, and the Truist to Hanover Square Tower. By 15 years ago, all that had changed. Downtown was lively with office workers and the revitalization of Fayetteville Street as the central business corridor. The tallest tower in Raleigh, PNC Plaza, and the new Raleigh Convention Center opened in 2008. And now, downtown is evolving again, filling up with residential towers as residents choose to live in the heart of the city. This year, downtown surpassed 10,000 residential units and a population of more than 15,000, according to the Downtown Raleigh Alliance. That's a far cry from 3 decades ago, when Greg Hatem of Empire Properties was one of the first investors to see downtown's potential. "It was just dead. There was nothing to do. There was not a lot of hanging out going on," he said. "There were a few restaurants down here. People would come down, but there wasn't this critical mass, this energy. You want to have this group of residential buildings that feed the downtown and is counter to the offices, right? Everybody you know comes to the office at 8, leaves at 5, and then everybody comes home at 5:30 and leaves at 7:30. So you have this changing of the guard, so to speak. But there's always some activity down here." Hatem credited Charles Meeker, who became mayor in 2001, with leading the city to focus on opening up Fayetteville Street, bringing in residential options, developing the convention center, and adding more retail and increasing walkability. "We were actually in a pretty great spot, and COVID kind of flipped everything on its ear," Hatem said. "And now, downtown Raleigh is looking to get back on its feet. After the pandemic and the rise of remote work, the landscape of the core of the city has become more focused on residential and less on office. While office projects have stalled, residential towers continue rising. And all that comes at a time when nearby Dix Park is beginning to flourish, with its Gibson Play Plaza attracting mobs of families every month." The gap between Dix Park and the southwestern edge of downtown is closing in with a surging development along Lake Wheeler Road, the future expanded convention center, the 600-room Omni Hotel, and the new location of Red Hat Amphitheater. Meanwhile, after rising concerns about crime, the Raleigh City Council and the Raleigh Police Department have added additional patrols, particularly around Glenwood South. In March, the police department told the city council that year over year, violent crime had dropped 3% and property crime 29%. After a tumultuous 5 years, a shift in thinking from the city council and Raleigh Downtown Alliance helped spark the current rise in residential. The downtown landscape is dripping with evidence of this. Bill King, CEO of the Downtown Raleigh Alliance, noted that 4,564 units have been either completed or under construction since 2020. "What's interesting about that, too, is if you remember early COVID in 2020, there was this big fear of, gosh, downtown, everyone's just going to move out. Nobody's going to want to live in these multifamily buildings in these dense areas. Everyone's going to the country and getting out of these urban cores. And basically, the opposite has happened," he said. "And it's been the shining star of our downtown economy the last 5 years. We've added a lot of residential units and residential growth." Why residential? The newest apartment building to open is the Mave, which rises 20 stories and has 297 units. The building pushed downtown Raleigh across the 10,000 residential units threshold, sitting at the corner of Dawson and Lenoir in the southwest Raleigh, looking toward the core skyline. Built by Virginia's Capitol Square, it's a sign of the development shift toward the west and southwest corridors of downtown, a slow but steady expansion of its boundaries. Natalie Mason, Executive Vice President of Development for Capitol Square, said the company acquired the site in 2020. The company was looking for opportunity zone opportunities in the southeast to develop. "We really like this site because it was in this path of growth out of downtown toward the south and in a neighborhood adjacent to the warehouse district, adjacent to downtown. So even though it was an opportunity zone, it was definitely a great opportunity to invest. And with opportunity zone investment, it's a 10-year hold," Mason said. "When we looked at sites, it was all about what neighborhoods, what markets do we really believe in 10 years from now? And with all the investment going into downtown, expanding the convention center hotel, the permanent Red Hat amphitheater, and then, of course, other private investment in this neighborhood, we felt really good about owning an asset for 10 years in this submarket, and we still do." After opening in April, the Mave is nearly 40% leased, catering to young professionals, according to Mason. Also opening this year was Alexan Moto in Glenwood South by Trammell Crow Residential of Dallas, contributing 186 apartments. It is 54% leased, according to its website. Overall, the apartment occupancy rate is 92.1%, according to the Downtown Raleigh Alliance, reflecting a substantial rise in interest. In 2015, there were 8,000 people living in 4,000 residential units. By 2020, those numbers jumped to 12,000 people in 7,800 residences. With record supply, you're going to need strong demand to fill those units. Otherwise, rents are going to go backwards, said John Michaels, JLL Managing Director of Capital Markets. "So fortunately, while we have had record supply and record availability, we've had very strong absorption in downtown as well. And we've leased more units in downtown Raleigh in the past 12 to 18 months than we ever have in that time period in that span. So that just shows that people want to live downtown." All of this has developers pivoting away from office towers and turning toward residential. The majority of buildings under construction or proposed for downtown Raleigh are either strictly residential, mixed-use residential, or hospitality. The only office buildings under construction downtown are for government and education uses. The City of Raleigh Municipal Building is rising at the corner of McDowell and Hargett Streets, while the North Carolina Education Campus is coming along at the corner of Jones and McDowell Streets. No major commercial real estate projects had broken ground since 2022 until Turnbridge Equities of New York broke ground in early October on a 37-story tower in Glenwood South. Brian Purdy, Director of Planning and Design for McAdams, said the trend overall is positive. "The residential aspect and having that balance in downtown, that's what's going to help create that 18-hour city, and the city really needs that. We certainly see a lot of activity in the Glenwood South Corridor and the western part of downtown, but you get into more of the core part of downtown. And having that residential aspect bleed further into downtown, it's going to continue to help all of downtown." Highline Glenwood, the Turnbridge project, will be the tallest residential tower in Raleigh with 308 units, 7,500 square feet of ground floor retail, and a 15,000 square foot public plaza. Meanwhile, One Nash Square, the boutique condominium tower across from Nash Square, could break ground in 2026 if everything goes according to plan for Alchemy Properties south of New York. The residential building will have 82 condos across 20 stories and 5,500 square feet of retail space on the ground level. In addition, Hoffman & Associates of Washington, D.C. is the developer behind Seaboard Station and the 23-story residential and retail tower, Union West, that will sit on top of the new RUS bus station in the Warehouse District. While Union West has been scaled back, it is scheduled to have 385 residential units and 20,000 square feet of retail, although construction has not yet started. Several developers had office space as part of their project and chose to either completely remove it or push it back to a later phase, banking on the office market conditions improving. In addition, Raleigh City Council and the Downtown Raleigh Alliance have spent the past 5 years pushing for more residential development downtown. This includes the council approving more rezonings to allow for more density, height, and development on both groups working together to bring a grocery store downtown. Nearly 100 parcels in downtown, a total of 53 acres, are zoned for up to 40 stories, according to the Wake County Geographical Mapping System. In addition, the closed Contemporary Art Museum in the Warehouse District was zoned downtown mixed use up to 40 stories in 2020, with the condition that affordable housing be included in any development. While there are no current site plans, the museum's board of directors is exploring selling the property. Some parcels have already been developed, but 17 are surface parking lots. In fact, Highwoods Properties put its parking lot property at 301 South Wilmington Street up for sale in April. The lot is zoned for up to 40 stories, and Highwoods originally planned to build an office tower on site, having owned it since 2017, but realized a residential tower would be better suited. The listing with Foundry Commercial shows the property as under contract. With more people living downtown and the population expected to reach 24,000 people by 2030, the DRA is looking to bring more grocery stores in addition to the Weaver Street Market, which opened in 2019, and Publix, which followed in 2020. King said the DRA has talked with developers who have larger development sites on the east side to see if they could incorporate a grocery store into their projects. King said part of the answer to bringing more people downtown and addressing safety issues is having more people live downtown and providing a variety of uses. We want a great diversity of uses downtown, Councilmember Jane Harrison said. So whether that's residential, commercial, retail, we want people to live, work, and play downtown, to not even have to leave downtown if they don't want to. One of the areas we do struggle with is retail. Sometimes the retail options are not affordable or not serving general needs. There's not a Target downtown or as many places to buy clothing. There are certainly some really neat niche shops for vintage clothes or specialty boutiques, but when it comes to everyday needs, I don't want people thinking they still have to drive out to the mall or go to Crossroads and Cary. While downtown Raleigh might still be considered small when compared to central districts in other cities, its growth over the past 30 years has been rapid. The first skyscraper came in the form of 150 Fayetteville Street in 1990. More office towers followed, leading to more than 6.3 million square feet of office space in downtown Raleigh alone. That accounts for 10% of the Triangle's total office space. For a while, the uses that made up downtown were mainly office buildings with ground floor retail. The museums and some hotels. The most prominent hotel downtown for years was the Sir Walter Hotel, which was converted to senior housing in 1979. The 500,000 square foot convention center arrived in 2008, with the connecting Marriott City Center Hotel opening in conjunction. The first major residential tower was the Sky House in 2014, rising 23 stories. Mixed-use buildings came online not long after. The Dillon at 17 stories opened in 2018 and the 22-story FNB Tower in 2019. The pandemic stalled that. Besides the Mave, the newest towers are the 20-story 400H and the 19-story 301 Hillsborough Tower. 400H has retail on the ground level with office space and apartments above, while 301 Hillsborough is office and ground floor retail. 400H opened in 2024 and is likely to be the last office tower for a while, as no new projects have started construction, nor are any proposed or in site review, meaning no new office product will deliver in the Triangle until at least 2029. So can downtown Raleigh become just as vibrant, if not more, than it was pre-COVID? Haydom says it's just a matter of finding the right mix of uses. According to him, that is about 3 years away, and downtown is, quote, on the cusp. The right mix includes office, residential, hospitality, retail, restaurants, and tourist draws. Downtown Raleigh needs to fill all the gaps so that if people live there, they never have to leave. And then for those who don't live there, give them a reason to visit and linger. It's a huge undertaking because it means more hotels, more places to shop, more family-friendly activities, more nightlife for the adults, and even more residences. The city is banking on the expanded convention center and the new Omni Hotel to add to downtown's vibrancy and draw more people. Harrison said that activating public parks and adding interactive public art is a priority for the council and what she would like to see be added to downtown. She specifically mentioned the future Smoky Hollow Park and the possibility of having a permanent stage in downtown on Fayetteville Street for music festivals, similar to what Cary put in its downtown park. Meckles and Haydom both said downtown also needs a Fortune 500 company to put their headquarters in downtown, drawing even more employees, residents, and growth. But what will downtown see by 2030? The short answer is even more residential growth. That growth will be mostly concentrated in southern downtown, according to King and Harrison. With the opening of the Omni Hotel, expansion of Convention Center, and new location of Red Hat Amphitheater, the area will fill up with development and constant activity. Haydom has seen this before, investing in properties downtown and creating restaurants such as Citi and the Raleigh Times, and even buying the Mecca. Looking ahead, he sees more hotels, more visitors, and more energy sparked by the larger convention center. The convention center will be bigger, so we'll have more folks coming in and out. What's amazing about that is that drives more people that want to move here. So then you add the thousands of people who are going to be living in downtown that are all milling through the streets at all hours, he said. I live in Oakwood, which is 6 blocks from where we work on Fayetteville Street. It was a beautiful night last night at 9 o'clock. I just said, I'm going to go take a walk. And I took a 10-block walk around. And we'll start seeing more of that in downtown, too, because there will be more people and more crazy people like me that want to take a walk at 10 o'clock at night. Why don't we hop on over to an agricultural article now? North Carolina soybean farmers are still safe for now. China's soybean import halt could eventually hurt North Carolina farmers. The coastal city of Little Washington is 7,000 miles from China, but global tensions have many concerned about how it will impact them, including soybean farmers in rural North Carolina. North Carolina has 1.6 million acres being farmed for soybeans, ranking 16th among states overall. The largest producers are Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, and North Dakota. Charles Hall, executive director of the North Carolina Soybean Producers Association, said farmers here have not been impacted yet by China's decision to stop importing soybeans from the U.S. China imported zero American soybeans in September. We are somewhat isolated from the global situation, Hall said. We are growing beans that are processed in North Carolina. A lot of them are processed in Fayetteville and some in Virginia. Hall explained that when a soybean is processed, about 20% of it goes to oil, and the rest generally becomes food for animals such as pigs and poultry. Many of the state's top producing counties are in eastern North Carolina, led by Beaufort with Little Washington, but also including Pasquotank in the northeastern part of the state, and Sampson, home to Clinton. Most of the state's biggest soybean producers are located east of Raleigh. North Carolina exports about 10% of its crop and about 2% overall to China. So the immediate impact of China's cutback is minimal. But the downstream impact could be significant. Hall said many of the states in the West depend on China. With that market closed, those producers will look to sell soybeans elsewhere, potentially pushing down the value of North Carolina's crop. It's not happening just yet, but my fear is that it could happen, he said. Here's a seismic shift article in today's Triangle Business Journal. IBM moves most workers off main RTP campus. The Research Triangle took off when IBM came in 1965, sparking the region's growth. After decades at its 400-acre campus in Research Triangle Park, IBM has relocated the bulk of its workforce to leased space nearby. The global technology company has moved most of its employees out of its RTP offices off East Cornwallis Street and, quote, is exploring options for the campus, spokeswoman Carrie Benza told Triangle Business Journal. The recent move shifted most employees to the IBM 500 complex off Miami Boulevard, which IBM sold to a developer 2 years ago. A small number of employees remain at the East Cornwallis campus, according to Benza, who declined to provide specific numbers. There are still labs at the campus, as well as IBM's local security operation. IBM came to RTP in the mid-1960s with the opening of a manufacturing facility, when the park was mostly undeveloped. The company's arrival was a key catalyst that helped shape the Triangle's status as a research hub. But now, big plans are taking shape to reimagine the park as a hub for live, work, play. Earlier this year, the Research Triangle Foundation moved forward a plan to create a 15-minute city in RTP. Part of that vision is already visible with the rise of Hub RTP, a mixed-use project featuring offices, residential units, plus restaurants and retail options. It's not clear what happens next with IBM's campus. Once home to the New York company's server and PC operations before those divisions were sold to Lenovo. The East Cornwallis site, which once held 10,000 employees, is assessed at $351.7 million, according to tax records. Benza declined to provide a headcount for IBM in the Triangle, but said this move does not impact our local population numbers. TBJ Research estimates about 7,000 IBMers are based in the Triangle. Moving employees out of the aging RTP campus appears to have been a decision made to improve the situation for the company's workers. IBM is focused on identifying real estate opportunities that enhance the employee experience, Benza said in an email. The decision underscores our continued efforts to optimize our footprint and foster deeper collaboration and innovation among IBMers in Raleigh-Durham. The 500 complex, a 774,000-square-foot, four-building office campus, was sold by IBM to Heinz Global Income Trust in 2023 for $66 million. IBM's lease ends December 31, 2028, with options to renew. Over the years, IBM has explored options for its legacy campus, including putting some of the acreage up for sublease. The company has undergone multiple rounds of layoffs in recent years as it works to, quote, align its workforce with in-demand skills, particularly in artificial intelligence and hybrid cloud. IBM also owns Red Hat, the cloud software firm headquartered in downtown Raleigh, that has become a key revenue source for the company. Staying in the RTP, here's a Chasing Jobs article, Life Sciences Firms, I Move to RTP. Jobs investment continue to consider Triangle for expansions and relocations. Life sciences players are circling Research Triangle Park for expansions and relocations. Matt Gladick, Vice President of Economic Development at the Greater Durham Chamber of Commerce, said his county is bustling with project activity. His team is negotiating with 20 active projects worth up to $8 billion in investment and 4,000 jobs. And life sciences dominates, and RTP has been a particular focus area. That's where we have the zoning and available property, he said. Those properties could include sublease options, as RTP is the Triangle submarket with the most space available, with 1.63 million square feet across dozens of buildings up for grabs. Companies like GlaxoSmithKline, IQVIA, and UBS all still have their more than 200,000 square foot buildings up for sublease. But talent, and not just real estate, is what consistently keeps the Triangle in the economic development conversation, Gladick said. That's consistent with what developers at the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina are seeing. Statewide, EDPNC entered the month with 253 active projects, slightly up from 245 reported a month ago. Should the state win all of them, it would mean the potential for $64 billion in new investments and 76,000 new jobs. And, as it is in Durham, life sciences leads in terms of sectors eyeing the state. Here is activity by sector, percent of total project pipeline. Life sciences is 12%. Energy is 11%. Chemicals and plastics are 8%. Construction materials, 7%. And food, beverages, and agriculture are 7%. 45% of projects eyeing the state originate abroad, according to EDPNC. Germany is the largest international market for deals, followed by China, Canada, Switzerland, and Italy. Here's an article out of Johnston County from today's Triangle Business Journal. Smithville rejects housing project. Amid concerns surrounding density and the operations of a local hog farm, leaders in a growing town have denied a housing proposal that called for more than 1,000 new homes. The Smithfield Town Council voted recently in a 5-2 decision to deny an annexation and conditional rezoning for nearly 500 acres at 2917 Wilson's Mills Road. The decision, which came after more than 3 hours of discussion, prevents the Bellamy subdivision from moving forward. The project was proposed by Clayton-based Rock Tower Partners and called for 1,147 housing units, with 870 being detached single-family homes and 277 being townhomes. Ben Mathis, a managing partner with Rock Tower Partners, declined to comment on the council's decision. As with many proposals for large housing developments in the region, density, or the number of housing units per acre, was a main concern raised by residents during the public hearing on the rezoning request. The development called for 2.4 dwelling units per acre. In its review, Smithfield planning staff said that, quote, the proposed density of 2.4 matches low-density residential guidance. Councilman Sloan Stevens said during the meeting, I get that development is coming, but that doesn't mean we have to grab the first shiny object that comes in front of us. Another concern discussed during the meeting was that the massive subdivision could disrupt the operations of an adjacent hog farm owned and operated by the Youngblood family. If someone is going to try to place a hog farm somewhere, they have to be at least 1,500 feet away from an occupied residence. None of what has been proposed to you all here tonight has come close to meeting that, said Andrew Petesh, a land use attorney representing the Youngblood family. In our real estate and development section of today's Business Journal, a Raleigh couple will build condos. A Raleigh couple is dipping their toes into real estate development. Clayton and Caitlin Kelly, owners of Oak City Stays, LLC, are turning one of their rental properties into a condominium building. The LLC filed a site plan with the City of Raleigh for an 11-unit condo building across from Transfer Company Food Hall on the east side of downtown. The aim is to provide an entry point for young people seeking to own a home downtown. It's prompted by the couple's own struggles 12 years ago to find affordably priced homes after they graduated from North Carolina State University and were newly married. They bought a home in the same neighborhood where the condos will go. It was nice to get that big city feel when we were that age, when we were deciding what we wanted to do with this property. You want to keep in mind who's going to be buying it, so we're like, who's our avatar for this property? Clayton Kelly said. We need to build a place that would have been perfect for us when we were looking downtown, trying to find an affordable place to live, because that area has exploded so much the past couple years in terms of price. Rather than selling the single-family home at 328 Chavis Way, they decided to build condos priced in the 300,000s. He said the project is still early in the review process and doesn't have a development cost yet, but that it will be over $2 million. This is the Kellys' first time developing a property, but they have done a variety of investments and rentals since 2014. We know the needs of the neighborhood. We know what corner lots are good for, where we're not going to be disrupting the neighborhoods, Clayton said. Switching over to healthcare and life sciences, CHSE moves forward with its treatment for asthma. A pharmaceutical company in Cary is moving closer to launching a new asthma therapy. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration recently accepted CHSE's USA's new drug application for an inhaler that combines three active ingredients in a single device. The regulatory submission is a major step for CHSE USA, a subsidiary of Italian company CHSE Pharmaceutici. The asthma therapy is already approved in nearly 50 countries, including nations across Europe, under the name Trimbo. The treatment is part of CHSE's respiratory division called AIR, which generated nearly $2 billion in revenue in 2024, according to the company's latest annual report. CHSE also operates rare disease and specialty medical care businesses. The company is targeting a large market in the U.S. where more than 25 million people have asthma and more than 3,600 adults die from asthma each year. The unmet medical need is real, said Martin Marciniak, vice president of U.S. Medical Affairs at CHSE. I think people in the U.S. and globally probably feel this to be a solved issue. It's just far from the case. CHSE is trying to address the unmet need through a single inhaler that combines three active ingredients. This is intended to be easier for patients who are managing multiple inhalers. I can look at the experience of my mother, who used to have three or four inhalers, and a son like myself who's sitting there trying to explain to her that she actually has to keep track of the dosing, the timing, and things like that, Marcianek said. CHIESI was the first company to commercialize a triple therapy for asthma outside of the U.S., but with its move into the U.S., the company is entering a market with an existing product already approved, GSK's Trelegy. The company is expecting a response from the FDA on its application in the second half of next year. If approved, the therapy would be manufactured for the U.S. market at the company's production plant and headquarters in Parma, Italy. Here's a fun article in our retail and restaurants section of the Triangle Business Journal. Restaurant to return after 5-year hiatus. After more than a 5-year hiatus, Anita Kalek is making a restaurant comeback, this time in a much bigger location. Kalek plans to open Levant Bistro at 7400 Six Forks Road in Raleigh in late winter or early spring next year. Kalek closed Levant Bistro in Lafayette Village in 2020. Her lease was ending, and she wanted to help her kids through the difficulties of online school during the pandemic. Plus, she needed a larger space to run Levant Bistro's restaurant and bakery. Over the last 5 years since I've closed, I've constantly, on a weekly basis, received emails and notifications from my clients to ask me about whether I'm reopening or not, she said. She signed the lease for the new location in September. The new restaurant will have a handful of neighborhood eateries, including Vinny's Steakhouse and Tavern, Hero's Pub and Sandwich Shop, and La Rancherita Mexican Restaurant. I also wanted to remain in North Raleigh because that is the community that we served in the past. It's a strong community for us, and we love just staying in that area and welcoming back our clients, Kalek said. One of the reasons why demand for Levant Bistro is so strong, it's dedicated to a gluten-free and soy-free menu. Whatever the allergy may be, this is a space that is very welcoming for that, because this is what we're dedicated to do, and we are offering the full spectrum of services so that families who have allergies don't have to miss out on anything. Kalek, who is Lebanese, said Levant Bistro's dishes go beyond Lebanese cuisine to encompass the broader Levant, from Turkey to Egypt. The Six Forks Road location is 4,000 square feet, more than double the previous location in Lafayette Village, which was 1,700 square feet. Here's an interesting article under our Shades of Success section. Trust put to the test. The North Carolina state government is aiming to build a fast track to AI innovation and responsible problem solving. 6 months into his job as the Deputy Secretary for AI and Policy at the North Carolina Department of Information Technology, Isa Shea's vision for the state is to be known for how trustworthy our AI implementations are, that we have the trust of not only the people we're trying to serve, but also the trust of our colleagues, that we are not trying to use AI to eliminate their jobs. In the same breath, he stressed the other side of the trust coin is making sure that people don't trust AI too much. It's a balancing act that he honed over his 21 years at SAS, where he served as governance and data ethics practice principal, developing AI strategies as he consulted with clients ranging from nonprofit organizations to Fortune 1000 corporations to the United Nations. Shea's takeaway, then and now, there are new muscles that we have to develop as a society, the critical thinking muscle to be able to use this tool appropriately. With the launch of an AI accelerator within North Carolina DIT last month, the state's journey to AI expertise began in earnest, bringing what she described as a private sector mentality of innovation into the public sector. In the private sector, we know it's okay to fail because it takes like 1,000 good ideas before you find that next blockbuster billion-dollar idea, he said. The AI accelerator mirrors that sentiment, encouraging exploration of innovative solutions and enabling ideas to be tested and proven, or fail fast. It serves as an innovation hub to facilitate collaboration between state agencies, private companies, and university partners. Employees throughout state government are encouraged to submit applications to the accelerator for AI solutions that could address significant problems they're dealing with in their work. Two things make the AI accelerator unique. One is its rapid iteration across what she describes as a 60-day sprint, when applications that are accepted undergo the defined trial period, after which the agencies have answers to their questions and a working prototype that helps determine if this version of AI could be a viable solution. Is the juice worth the squeeze, as they say? Or should we shelve this idea and move on to the next idea, she said. The second differentiator is that no money exchanges hands. So if the prototype has merit and it appears the tested AI is a solution to the problem being addressed, then the agencies will do their standard procurement process and issue a request for proposal. That first phase, that 60-day test of a prototype, is more like a preliminary request for information, as she explained. You can look at the AI accelerator as the modern version of an RFI. Whereas before you might ask a vendor to explain how they would solve a problem, now they're going to show us. Created as part of the governor's executive order that also established the state's AI Leadership Council, which advises on AI strategy and policy, the AI Accelerator is a centralized hub for partnerships, development, and implementation. The executive order, issued September 2nd, requires that all cabinet agencies submit 3 ideas to the accelerator within 6 months. As of last week, DIT had already received 25 applications. 6 had been accepted and 3 denied. Of those initial 25 applications, 4 were essentially duplicates of the same kind of problem, just from different agencies. The difference in the 6 that were accepted versus the 3 denied is not that they were good and bad ideas. Rather, it was an intentional focus on the part of DIT to start with ideas that could have high-value impact while utilizing low-risk data. Basically, publicly available data where there were no concerns about privacy. One of the things that we're doing from an innovative perspective as a state is we're really leaning into this idea of synthetic data, she said. That speaks directly to creating responsible, trustworthy AI by protecting privacy and concealing any personally identifying information. The object is to replace sensitive data that was used to train an AI model with a statistically identical data set, one that has the same statistical values numerically of everything you're looking for, but that doesn't have any of the real-life sensitivities. He said, adding that it's important to differentiate between a synthetic data set and one that has been simulated, like might be done using ChatGPT, which could include hallucinations. Synthetic data sets are made using statistical capabilities and number crunching, quantitative methods that have been around for decades, and so there are no hallucinations, she said. We're also playing with digital twins. That is like the leading edge of where AI is now. A report from the Deloitte Center for Integrated Research released earlier this summer defined digital twins as virtual replicas of physical processes or systems that can simulate complex environments which were previously too difficult to model in a virtual format. The global digital twin market is forecasted to grow from $13 billion in 2023 to $259 billion by 2032 per Deloitte. For example, the city of Cincinnati utilized Deloitte's Opto AI autonomous technology to expedite review of its critical infrastructure, specifically bridges that were either over 150 years old or that experienced more than 100,000 vehicles daily, to identify emerging structural issues and prioritize repairs. She envisions utilizing digital twins across numerous applications, for instance, looking at the traffic patterns in and around major metro areas, particularly when a city is hosting a major event, to simulate traffic flow and improve access. The AI accelerator is open to any and all vendors, he said, and I want to strongly encourage North Carolina AI startups to come through the state and collaborate through the accelerator to work with state agencies. The goal is to have complete transparency in sharing the results. A list of case studies will be maintained on the NCDIT website, showcasing success stories of how AI is having a beneficial impact, as well as when a strategy has not yielded the desired result. Focusing on the business section of this week's Triangle Business Journal, here's an article on skilled labor. Grants aim to train trade workers. The Triangle needs all the skilled trade workers it can get, and now a Durham firm that provides software services for contractors is leading an effort to help build a pipeline for skilled trades workers. Service Trade is teaming up with Durham Technical Community College on a Grow Your Own initiative that will help train and develop service technicians. The inaugural $5,000 grant will go to VSC Fire and Security to support the hiring and training of a new apprentice. Here's an interesting sports article in the Triangle Business Journal. Hulu wanted inside look at Belichick's life off-field while coaching UNC. A 5-episode series chronicling Bill Belichick's coaching at UNC Chapel Hill was set to have Hulu viewers waking up with the coach. A public records release from October 20th outlines the vision for the show, which fell through. A candid look at Belichick's awesomely interesting life in exchange for a $250,000 fee for the school. Record show production kicked off in August. Would be amazing to wake up with him 4 a.m., brushing teeth, or just something interesting visually that he does before he heads to work, wrote Jacqueline Decker, a producer on the project. The crew could drive to campus with Belichick, Decker suggested. Even eating in the cafeteria is incredibly interesting for him and our audience, she wrote, adding that the plan was to wrap filming when he left for the day. We've heard it's 11 p.m., which is wild and awesomely interesting. The crew also aimed to interview the quarterbacks to highlight a leader on the team and flash back to Bill's relationship with Tom Brady, according to the records that Carolina released. A flurry of emails in July and August between the production company, Everwonder, and UNC hashed out logistics. Subject lines like Chapel Bill Production Kickoff covered locations ranging from the Belichick home to the Dean Smith Center. Communication with Belichick went through his girlfriend, Jordan Hudson, according to records. A revised release form referencing changes reportedly requested by Hudson was sent to her August 7th. Producers hoped to keep the project under wraps, but new secrecy was unlikely. A licensing agreement referenced a separate deal allowing Belichick to use university recordings for personal and professional use outside the documentary. But Belichick may not have embraced the level of candor the crew envisioned. People magazine reported that the series unraveled due to Hulu's focus on his home life rather than football. Here's an aviation article called Patching It Up. Aging airfield remains concern for RDU. Aging pavement continues to plague Raleigh-Durham International Airport, and in order to keep the main runway operational while a new one is being built, millions of dollars will be required. So crews have been replacing asphalt on the international runway. In all, 350 slabs have been replaced since 2019. You lose that runway, you lose your West Coast service, you lose your transatlantic service. It doesn't work, Mike Langeth, CEO of the Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority, told the board October 16th, where $1.5 million was approved to keep current infrastructure functioning. The funding includes reparations for the Terminal 1 apron, which is at the end of its useful life. According to Jim Novak, RDU's Director of Site Engineering, the goal is to bring it up to speed for 10 to 15 years until we can figure out what to do with the Terminal 1 expansion. Here's an article out of Apex. A plan to build data center in Apex causes stir. Today, it's 189 acres of farmland near the Sharon Harris nuclear plant, just outside of Apex. But in a matter of years, it could be home to a 4-building data center complex designed to support artificial intelligence workloads. Michael Natelli, Executive Vice President at Natelli Investments, the Maryland firm spearheading the proposed project, said advanced conversations are underway. Homeowners nearby are pushing back, citing concerns about surging power bills, noise, and emissions. One must ask if it is appropriate to put such a large data center within 2 miles of 11 distinct housing communities, resident Michelle Hoffner O'Connor told the Apex Town Council on September 5th. Natelli said he understands, but his proposed project, dubbed New Hill Digital Campus, is different, he said. It's located in a corridor identified by the town for future industrial use, bordered on 3 sides by land owned by utilities. I really don't think this is a decision between existing farmland and a data center, he said. It's a data center or another industrial use. If the town rejects the rezoning request, Natelli said, he'll likely move on. That could mean another industrial user, perhaps one even less amenable to its neighbors. An influx of new jobs are coming to towns in eastern North Carolina. Hundreds of jobs are coming to eastern North Carolina following several big project announcements. The North Carolina Department of Commerce recently announced that three different companies will be relocating, expanding, and adding a facility in Greene, Lenoir, and Bladen counties, respectively. The combined investments total $45 million and more than 200 jobs. In a dynamic economy, global manufacturers want to operate in places where they know they can succeed, North Carolina Commerce Secretary Lee Lilly said in a statement. Here's more information. Judco Manufacturing, Inc., an automotive supplier based in Los Angeles, is investing $5.3 million to relocate its headquarters and research and development operations to Snow Hill in Greene County. The company says the move will create 60 new jobs. Electrolux Consumer Products, a Swedish home appliance manufacturer whose North American headquarters is in Charlotte, is investing $23.7 million to expand its operations in Kinston. It says the expansion will add 74 new jobs. MST Rebar, a Toronto-based fiberglass rebar supplier, will invest $15.5 million to locate its first U.S. fiberglass rebar manufacturing facility in Bladen County. It says it will create 83 new jobs through this move. Here's additional restaurant and retail news from this week's edition of the Triangle Business Journal. In Knightdale, a Mexican restaurant is closing as sales fall. A Mexican restaurant is pouring its last tequila shots. Tequila Tacos and Mezcal, located at 706 Money Court, will close November 2nd in Knightdale. In its place, another Mexican restaurant is expected to open. Our sales are not high enough for our expenses, and they haven't been for the last few months, owner Daniel Torres said. While weekends have brought in many diners, it's been a different story on weekdays. There's no consistency during the week, Torres said. Tequila will continue operating its Wake Forest location. And a women's boutique is opening in Holly Springs. After relocating from Anger, a mom and her two daughters have opened a women's boutique in Holly Springs. Betty and Jane Boutique is at the Peterson Station development off Sunset Lake Road. Danielle Davis, along with her daughters Rachel Davis Churchill and Elizabeth Davis, own the boutique together. The family closed the previous location in September. Davis Churchill described the boutique as having a classic Southern style. Betty and Jane's owners have three part-time employees at the 1,668-square-foot store. Breeze is ramping up its loyalty program. Rewards programs are common among big airlines such as Delta Airlines, and now Breeze Airways is ramping up its loyalty program as it invests in new routes out of Raleigh-Durham International Airport. Breeze launched its rewards program last year, but effective January 1st, the airline will add bundle upgrades and new options. Its Visa partnership will allow qualifying card members to enhance all of their loyalty perks. Breeze is targeting leisure travelers, not necessarily those racking up miles from business trips. It's about growing, Breeze Airways Chief Commercial Officer Lucas Johnson said. Just like everything with us, what starts small is growing pretty rapidly. We expect it to be a significant contributor in future years. In health food news, a new fast casual restaurant is planned for Cary. Mahana Fresh, the fast casual health food restaurant known for its customizable bowls made with fresh ingredients, will expand in Cary on October 25th. The restaurant is in Parkside Town Commons, and the space was once the spot of Mexican restaurant Sombrero. Signature bowls at Mahana Fresh include the Island Bliss Bowl with kale crunch salad, buffalo cauliflower, and Key West chicken, and the Veggie Vacay Bowl with coconut rice, sesame ginger broccoli, roasted mushrooms, and sesame garlic tofu. The new Cary spot is owned and operated by Suraj Shah, Om Patel, and Harshil Patel. The Oakwood area is targeted for townhomes. A local developer is raising the idea of putting townhomes in Raleigh's historic Oakwood neighborhood. An LLC, 319 Heck Street, filed an application to rezone a parcel off Oakwood Avenue to allow for townhomes. The applicant is seeking a zoning of residential mixed use up to three stories. The property is now zoned residential 10. The LLC is addressed to Stuart Cullinan, owner of development firm Local Post. Local Post's website lists the property at 310 Heck Street, described as a charming farmhouse that is a 15-minute walk from the heart of downtown Raleigh. Another nearby property at 123 Idlewild Avenue is also listed as a rental unit. Rather than tear down the apartment building, the applicant is looking to add townhomes that would accompany the building. A research team is hoping to print LED screens. A research project at Duke University could pave the way for printable electronics, potentially disrupting the $150 billion industry for flat panel electronic displays. Aaron Franklin, a professor and serial entrepreneur, previously launched tire sensor startup Tyrata, which raised millions in outside capital. Now the technology he's developing at Duke could help him do it again, this time with LED screens. But there's a catch. Grant cuts. A $3 million grant that could have propelled the project forward was halted earlier this year amid federal cuts. This is exactly the kind of research we should want to see more of in the U.S., Franklin said. A Starbucks location in Clayton sold for $2.7 million. A Starbucks location has been scooped up for millions of dollars in Clayton. 2900 East Millbrook, a Raleigh LLC, purchased the store at 13024 Clayton Boulevard for $2.7 million recently, according to deed records. The seller, FNC 90 LLC of Washington, D.C., bought the property in 2017 for around $1.65 million. Sam DeFranco, an investor tied to 2900 East Millbrook LLC, said his group sold property at 2900 East Millbrook Road in Raleigh and did a 1031 exchange into the Starbucks property. We will be making cosmetic improvements, including repainting and landscaping, to bring the product a fresh new look, he said. Clayton Boulevard is one of the busiest thoroughfares in Clayton. And in Lee County, a builder pivots to 125 single-family homes. A Raleigh home builder is making its third pivot in roughly 2 years on a proposed housing project in Samford. Rollingdale Investment, an LLC tied to Josh Swindell, a partner at Raleigh's Envision Homes, has submitted plans for 125 single-family detached homes on roughly 40 acres off Carthage Street near downtown. There have been many previous iterations of this plan. In March, Swindell submitted a plan for 119 townhomes on the property, leaving 20 acres open for either a future multifamily component or more townhomes. In short, the market has spoken and we are adjusting the product and layout to meet demand, Swindell said. He acquired roughly 40 acres off Carthage Street across separate purchases in 2024 for a total of $2.75 million, according to Lee County deed records. The plan submitted to the Sanford Lee County Broadway Technical Review Committee marks the fourth iteration of his proposal. A Florida firm plans apartments in Durham. A Florida company has opened the first of what is expected to be several multifamily projects in the Triangle. ZOM Living of Orlando has completed Maison Durham, a luxury apartment complex with 248 units and 12,500 square feet of retail space in downtown. The seven-story development is on East Main Street near the Durham Performing Arts Center. The apartment building marks the company's entrance into the Triangle market, and it already has four other projects in various stages of development. Rental rates start at $1,510 and go up to $3,349. Seth Avant, Senior Vice President of the Carolinas for ZOM, said Maison is 18% leased so far and that the company is seeing a lot of leasing activity from the Duke University Committee. Near RTP, a fully leased building sells for $25 million. A commercial real estate firm in Raleigh has invested in a fully leased flex building on the edge of Research Triangle Park. Edgewater Ventures paid $25 million for 601 Keystone Park Drive in Morrisville, according to Durham County deed records. The acquisition was a joint venture with Optimum Asset Management, which has offices in Boston and Europe. For Scott Humphrey, managing principal of Edgewater, the transaction was like coming full circle as he brokered several transactions of the Keystone buildings when he was with HFF. I'm very familiar with the park, and I've always loved these buildings. They're very functional, whether it's life science or electronic lab or data center or office space. They lend themselves to a variety of uses, and they're set up well for that, Humphrey said. Humphrey said Edgewater Ventures looks to acquire properties that have cash flow on day one and a low-risk profile. And our final article from this week's edition of the Triangle Business Journal takes place in downtown Raleigh, where a new law firm is going to Smoky Hollow. A group of attorneys has picked downtown Raleigh to be the office for a new law firm. Lee Segui has signed a lease for 6,353 square feet in Kane Realty's Smoky Hollow office building at 421 North Harrington Street. The firm will be located on the third floor and plans to move in next spring. Partner Matt Lee said it was important for Lee Segui to be located in the heart of the legal community. All of us as a firm believe in that, and we wanted to make sure we put our money where our mouth is. It's not a hard sell these days. I feel like downtown is vibrant, Lee said. Lee Segui, which specializes in class actions, employment, consumer products, and other areas, has 12 employees firm-wide and will probably hire one to two more employees in the future. We are running out of time today for this episode of Triangle Business Journal. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Christy Walters, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.